Howdy, howdy, good folks. This is the Growth Chat by Mail Modo. Today, we're going to talk about something very trendy. AI has, you know, just gone up in the Google Trends after the launch of ChatGPT, Bard.ai, and then there have been so many applications of AI in marketing. So many people are, you know, calling out the doomsday that artificial general intelligence is upon us, and we're going to dive into it. But this man I have here, Paul, he runs an AI company that has something to do with marketing. Paul, do you want to tell us about yourself and what you do? And what does your company do?
Well, yeah, just a little bit about myself. I'm by background what's called a computational social science. Specifically, like, that just means we apply computational modeling to human behavior. And I actually started my career in the U.S. Department of Defense. So I kind of deployed to Afghanistan, back and forth between Afghanistan and D.C., building models on a lot of unstructured data around conflict. That was back in 2008, 9, 10. And AMP is a kind of AI, what you would call reinforcement learning, kind of contextual band. It's a lot of flavors of AI, but that it's infrastructure to enable consumer apps and applications to significantly improve the quality and type of interaction that they can achieve through messaging and through comms.
Okay. I mean, it's kind of obvious to me how, you know, you can use AI in content. But I want you to break it down like I'm five as to how AI is applicable in these areas. Content, you know, it's pretty much obvious, natural language generation. Maybe you can talk about that and then tell us how what you're doing. I mean, just break it down to me like I'm a five-year-old.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you think about marketing, it's kind of three pieces. Think of it like almost like making a sandwich. You have to communicate with someone, which means you have to have what I like to call a treatment or a nudge. You have to have the content of that message. Okay. And so that's where most people are thinking about when they think about AI applications for marketing, is generating that content. Now, the second step of that sandwich is you have to figure out how to, once you've created lots and lots of messages, you have to have a way to assign a message to a user. Because now you no longer have one message for 1,000 users. If you generated 10,000 messages, you have to figure out how to take one of those messages and give it to one single person to maximize the likelihood of them responding. And then the follow-up is evaluating the response. And evaluating the response is a separate step because usually a response takes place over the course of a day. Think about like a streaming app. And imagine you're in Mumbai or Bangalore and you're on the way home from work, right? And you get a message about this really cool new TV show or movie. You don't really expect in most cases or in many cases that the person's going to watch the movie right then. They're going to watch it later that night or over the weekend. And so the evaluation process is sort of saying, all right, we've created all this content. We've now sent it to people. How do we know what worked and what didn't work?
Okay.
And that's a really interesting part of AI that is often under focused on. In performance marketing, it's pretty well, like, attribution is much further along than lifecycle marketing.
Cool. So this is what comes in lifecycle marketing. And if I'm getting lifecycle marketing right, is it's more than acquisition. Bulk of it is post-acquisition. You've gotten the person on the system. You've gotten the person on the app, on the, web, on the website. What happens beyond that?
Yeah, traditionally, if you divide the world of marketing up, it kind of has a fairly clean break, all right, between what's called acquisition or performance actually, we just stick with the term acquisition. And what that means is, especially, let's say, in the mobile world, it's sort of saying that first introduction to a user, that first encounter where that user will download the app. Like, that's a very clean event that is considered the acquisition. Lifecycle is everything that happens after that, kind of the continuation of the usage, the value, et cetera. Now, you don't just build a product and expect somebody to spend tons and tons of time, let's say, in an app. You have to actually engage with them in a much more concise, efficient way. And so messaging is part of that. Like, Mail Modo is an amazing tool that's allowed interaction to happen in the email channel, like in the email itself. So it's not just in the product, it's actually in the form of communication.
Got it. So when you say you bring someone onto the app and it's a lot of work keeping them on the app, most of the platforms that we've seen around the ecosystem that deal with this sort of, a problem, this sort of a challenge of keeping people on the app, retention is what I call it. They have a lot to do with the push notifications. Where does AI come in here? Are you talking about in-app or are you talking about outside the app? Because lifecycle can also be in-app, can be outside the app.
Yeah, at its most general level, you can say anything that's outside the structured user interface, the UI of the app. So that could be an in-app message. It can be a WhatsApp. It can be an SMS. It can be an email. It can be a push notification. And you asked the question, how does AI come in? And sort of, I kind of, you know, not glibly, but ask, where does AI not come in? When a person comes in your app, they've already answered the question, is this something they're interested in right now? Because otherwise they wouldn't be there. You can take it as fact. So they're in the app. So now all you have to do is make sure that your app helps them find what they want. So it's a UI UX problem. And that's where design and product has always focused. But here's the thing, because of that attention scarcity problem, right? People don't open apps and spend a lot of time on it. They think about maybe, right? Like think about like when you move houses, sometimes you have to. But sometimes it's just because, you know, like, man, I really need something fresh in my life. I should move, right? So you think about it like, I should, but then you get distracted and something else comes up. The thing is they don't just sit inside, open the app and wander around. No, but the problem is if you're speaking to them, you have to know, is now the right time? And AI comes in because otherwise it's impossible to do. Another kind of common term or concept in lifecycle marketing is customer journeys. And I would say customer journeys are dead. Customer journeys are when you have a fixed interaction. It's like when you go to the bank, there's a queue and a desk and you go and talk to the person, right? You can construct the bank, the journey there. You come into the bank, you stand in the queue, you go up to the desk, you have the conversation. When it's in the app, it can be any kind of interaction. It can be, I open it now, I check it, find out what the terms are, I close it and I think about it and I open it again tomorrow. It can be, I go right in and I fill out the first five steps of the KYC. Like there's so many, and it factorially explodes in terms of how you should actually have that interaction and when you should have that interaction. The old notion that you could construct a physical, like a journey, which is limited. It sort of says step one, step two, step three. And this is what people should do to use your app or to find value in it. No way. Like that's, people don't want that. They want your app to fit their life, not their life to fit your app.
You know, you're saying something big. And this is, I think, you know, I wanted to dive into this. What you're essentially talking about when you say customer journey, you're saying, you're kind of pointing out to the workflows that we build in.
That's right. Customer journey is a tool.
Yeah. With the workforce that we, the workflows that we build in, let's say, a MoEngage or a CleverTap or any, you know, customer journey orchestration sort of platform. It could be ads also. Hey,
yes.
He sees my ad once, then I'm going to retarget him twice. I'm going to pick people who've watched 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of workflows that are being used right now. You're saying they're useless.
I'm saying they're counterproductive. Yeah.
Okay.
They're forcing lots of people, lots of very diverse, specific, unique, interesting people into one rigid process. And that's not what the future looks like.
As I said, you know, you said something rather provocative because that's what that's been the livelihood / bread and butter / daily work of marketers to analyze, to deploy the most powerful workflow that actually triggers the audience.
Yep.
We have a question here. Don't the stages of activation remain fundamental to an app, and the displacement between any two specific activation points can be a journey? So irrespective of the interaction type, would it still make sense to talk in terms of customer journey?
Wait a second. Is the order of those points really fixed? So at Paysense, you know, we used to have to like ask for your salary slip. Now here was the problem, right? They don't have their salary slip when they're on the bank, on the road, right? It's at home. So that's the first request, right? So now we force them, we can't let them proceed until they do that thing, but they don't have that thing. So why is one step before the other step? In some cases, it's maybe required, but in many cases, it's not. It was just arbitrary. It was done based on some user research, some generalization, which looked at the largest minority of users and said, this is how it works. So let's do it. So you imposed it. So the sequence, right? Now, the time between the sequence, should it be 3 days? Should it be 1 day, right? Abandoned cart. You add something to the cart, you don't check out. Well, so, you know, a lot of literature suggests send the notification within 30 minutes. Well, some people, they abandoned the cart because they had an important question that they needed to ask their spouse at home. It doesn't matter how many notifications you send. They haven't gotten that information. It's useless. You're annoying them, right? So the point is that there's the variance in time. Then there's the variance in how often and how you follow up within those spaces between. And then let's come back to the original thing we talked about, which is copy. Why are people doing the thing? All right. So like, let's say you're a fitness app. If you run, you don't run to run. Nobody runs in order to run. They run to lose weight or to feel good, to clear their head. Think about a short message. You've only got a small amount of space in a push notification or an SMS. Do you tell them, get back on and complete the step in order to take your first run? Well, that's kind of lame. That doesn't really connect to why they care about it. Instead, you could say something like, you know, get ready to change your life, or feel better after a long day. Now, remember, we've got AI now. We can generate all of those versions of messages. So now the question is, which one of those versions? So in its most abstract sense, sure, it makes sense to think about maybe about that process. But actually, when you look at it in detail, what you're doing with the tool is forcing a very rigid process on a very diverse group of users.
Interesting. And, you know, Zeeshan kind of spoke my mind here. Then is the marketing world going to become dystopian soon? Because the way you describe the entire life cycle being managed by a system and not humans, where will humans land? Like you're saying message creation can happen via AI. Deployment can happen via AI. Inference can happen via AI. What do humans do? What do marketers do? The digital marketers of today?
So much. There are so many problems that really are nowhere close to being solved for right now. I think a good analogy is that just most people will find fairly easy to understand is autonomous driving. We've been promised self-driving cars for a long time. We're not close to getting them. And that's because the reality and the complexity of the world is such that it's just very hard computationally, et cetera, to deal with it. So I think there's a massive role for strategy and for thinking and being creative. So like all of those things around why people run, and if it's a running app, right, or what people are watching, et cetera. Right now, the AI is not good at answering those questions. It's not good at coming up with the original ideas. What it is good at doing is just implementing it once you give it. In fact, I'd say far from dystopian, it's going to become much more meaningful. Like automation is generally good for us. So no, I would say I'm generally pretty optimistic that the world's a much better place.
There are always two sides to this coin. There are people who are doomsday preachers, and there are people who are, including the World Economic Forum report, says 85 million jobs will be lost, but 97 million jobs will be created. You don't know who to believe, because there are doomsdayers, and there are doomsdayers as big as Elon Musk.
Yeah. So,
whose influence do you trust?
Yeah.
Okay. Very interesting. This was indeed very interesting. Now, finally, this is something that we should have started with, but I'm glad that you explained, the non-obvious to me about how AI can get into the customer journey and make customer journey as a, workflow concept, customer journey is, from a workflow perspective, customer journey could be obsolete, but let AI manage it. And that's where, the implementation of AI works. Now tell me, content creation. I know it can generate messages, but throw some light on GPT-3, ChatGPT, DALL-E. Images are being created by AI right today. Do they make graphic designers obsolete? Does ChatGPT/GPT-3 make content writers obsolete? What do you think about the creative aspects of marketing that AI is diving into? I understand where it plays a part in customer journey. That's for the analytical marketers. Now, there's the other breed that is the creative marketers.
Yeah, so let's just look at two industry examples. And the first one is a little further from content. The second will be from content because it's probably more interesting. First one is the world of finance, and specifically trading and markets, and specifically public market equity trading, what you think of as the stock market. By the 2000s, right, I think it was still something like 12 or 8% of trading was done by machines. By 2012-13, I believe the numbers are that it was north of 50 or 60%. Now it's north of 80%. Most trades that happen in public, on the public market, the stock exchange, are machine driven. They're algorithmic. They're bought and sold using algorithms driven by a model. Mm-hmm. Is the world of finance smaller than it was? Nah, I don't know those numbers exactly, but no, it's not smaller. It's a lot larger. There's arguments there, but basically what they're doing is generating value by making, value more liquid. We won't go into that more, but that's the process, right? It's just algorithms did not make the industry smaller. They made the industry bigger. Critique that. But the point is like just more tools. So I think ultimately, yes, some activity will be displaced from artists, but I think they'll develop new things that they need to do creatively. And definitely in the world of content for marketing, I don't see displacement happening. I see really just creative. The plain fact is right now, let's take travel. I don't know if you enjoy traveling.
I do.
Okay. So the thing is, if you're on a travel website and you're traveling, let's say you're coming to Singapore for business and somebody else on the webinar is going to come to Singapore for fun and you go on booking.com and you book a hotel, you both will see the exact same crowded, full description of the hotel. It'll be a paragraph. It'll tell you everything from the business center to its location, right? Super crowded. 80% of that information you don't need. You just need to know the thing you care about, right? But that paragraph was written by some poor copywriter who had to jam out thousands of them over time. All of that, all of a sudden now, we don't need to have one paragraph about a hotel. We could create 100 paragraphs about a hotel that emphasize for somebody who's interested in luxury and sophisticated travel versus adventure travel versus food versus anything and kind of recreate with content. But you still need people to guide that process to make sure that it's headed in the right direction, to like make sure it's not inappropriate. There's so many management problems that need to be solved. And I think marketers will do that higher level management and less of the grunt creation work.
I hope so too. Awesome. Cool. I'm going to ask you my last question. What does the new MarTech look like? We had MailChimp in 2010. We have MailModo in 2023, interactive emails. We had CleverTap in 2015 or 17. We have AMP in 2023.
Yeah.
What are the other fields, where new tools will come in and see massive adoption?
Yes, you can actually kind of break it down into those three pieces of the sandwich. Creating the content, you're going to see a whole world of content management software develop because once you like, people are all excited, you can generate all these thousands of versions or images, right? With GPT-3 or ChatGPT or whatever else comes next. Mm-hmm. Where do you store them? How do you organize them? How do you label them? What's the organization factor, right? So you kind of have to have a really, really high quality content management. Now, the second piece in terms of replacing MailChimp, so there's then the diagnosis piece. And what we're in the midst of right now is a lot of pipelining problems. So some of the bigger companies you're seeing come out right now are not solving the end functionality problem. They're solving the problem of how can I make sure that the data from the app and from here and from there is moving around and clean. So there's a lot of infrastructure problems that are getting worked out in the marketing space here where like just data is getting much better. And then of course, you've got the evaluation technology. And right now I think where you're going to sort of, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but you've got all of the data visualization and dashboarding tools. So the lookers, the click views, the tableaus, all of those things. Those are meant for humans to look at simple charts based on simple customer journeys. Think about how recommender systems work. Nobody's looking at a dashboard really of a recommender system in that same way because you can't interpret the results in that simple way. So I'm actually not very bullish on those dashboarding tools. So I think there's a lot of places where we do a bunch of dashboards to track things. And actually, we shouldn't even be paying attention to it. It doesn't matter. Like at a higher level, you need to know it's working. That's a different problem. But the way we're using the dashboards is not. So I think a lot of that tooling and necessity goes away.
Okay. That's a nice framework that you're leaving us with. Creation, diagnosis, evaluation. These are industries of their own, and there's a lot that can be done here. And many analogies from sandwich making to car driving, manual car driving. But lovely chatting, yeah?
Yeah.
Lovely having you on, Paul. Thanks for being here, audience. I hope you had a good time. Thank you. That's a goodbye. Signing off.
Awesome. Thank you, everyone.